The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, and this is
the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho.
And don't forget, it's Friday.
Black Friday! Bring the devil on the wall. It's Black Friday!
The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride, because guess what? It's WrestleMania 31 weekend. That means a couple things. One, I got one of the hottest stars in the game today. Daniel Bryan is here to give his thoughts on WrestleMania 31. Plus, the returning, the prodigal son, the exile, Egypt, is back to make his predictions for this weekend's matches, this weekend's madness, this weekend's extravaganza. So many things happening today. Such a cool show. And I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for joining us twice a week. You know, you get this show for free for twice a week. And it's all because of the great sponsors of Talk is Jericho that we have. I'm talking about all the people, including DraftKings. I'm talking DDP Yoga. I'm talking Dollar Shave Club. Of course, I'm talking about Amazon. Don't forget, you can use my Amazon links whenever you want at podcast1.com. If you click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner top of the page, then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You use those Amazon links every time you do. Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to show to help us cover the production costs. Keeps this show going. Keep it happening for free for you. So many cool things. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada Day, all kinds of cool stuff. You get the whole KISS catalog, tons of KISS merch. Go back and listen to when the God of Thunder was on the Pot of Thunder a few days ago. Gene Simmons, what an amazing conversation we had on Talk is Jericho. It's a conversation you've never, ever heard Gene sound before. You've never heard Gene like this. Go to Amazon, check out some KISS merch. Go to Amazon, buy some Cheech and Chong movies. Cheech Marin was here the other day as well. Such a cool conversation we had with him. Plus, you can get the new DVD that's sweeping the nation, the new Jericho DVD, The Road is Jericho documentary. Stories and tales about rare matches that you've never seen before. You don't want to miss this. Plus, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War, featuring SOS, our famous ABBA cover that incited mosh pits around the UK, around Europe. Plus, you get my new book and my third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. So many cool things you can get. If you help us out, you want to help us, go to Amazon. Buy anything you want. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keeper Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you get those links in one easy click. Help out this show. Go to Amazon and do your shopping today. All right. Do you have the WWE Network? You need to get that as well. So many cool things happening with the WWE Network. So many interesting matches you can watch, programming you can see. Huge, huge news coming up for me for Talk is Jericho. I'm sure you'll hear about that early next week, maybe on Monday, and we will fill you in on that when the news is released. But in the meantime, and in between time, we've got WrestleMania. Yeah, 31 is coming up. And got to tell you, getting a lot of questions about the man that was joining me for every pay-per-view, giving his predictions, giving his thoughts, giving his hypotheses. And then, of course, is Egypt the janitor. Egypt, for those of you that have forgotten or have never heard, was the janitor that was working at Westwood High School, Westwood Collegiate, back in 1988 when I had the BTWF, which was my wrestling company. We had Pummel Mania, main event, Eastern Crowbar versus the Galango Man. I climbed the ladder to get to the top of the ladder. And as I got there, before I could jump off, the high school janitor came in. We used to call him Egypt because he couldn't really understand what he was saying. Couldn't understand any of his language, any of his thought process. And he came in and said, "Oh, click the box, I'll stop you, you jump off the back." So huge problems with Egypt and myself until about a few months ago. Egypt and I became friends, and Egypt became a regular guest of the show. Unfortunately, there was an impasse. There was a contract dispute between Egypt and Chris Jericho. The big news of the week is that Egypt has re-signed with Talk is Jericho. I gave him an offer he could not refuse, and he stepped away from his training to become a UFC reviewer, a UFC prognosticator, and he's now back with Talk is Jericho for the long haul. So we will now go through the list of all of the matches for WrestleMania 31 with Egypt. And I just got to say, Egypt, it's great to have you back on the show. I know there was a contractual impasse, but I know there were some outside issues as well. What were your problems with me and with my show, Egypt, and why has it been so long since you're on the show?
I have to tell you, Jericho, first of all, I'm very excited to be back on Tweakies Jericho. After so many months of contract negotiations and issues and blow-ups between you and I, my biggest problem was that you told the fans to shut the hell up if they did not like Roman Reigns going to the main event position. Jericho, I pay my money. Jericho, I'm allowed to have an opinion. Jericho, if I choose to not like Roman Reigns, you should not say shut the hell up to me and bully me. I was very angry with you, as was many people on the Twitter following.
Well, Egypt, you do have a good point about that. And it's funny because I was a little bit misquoted in that when I said, if the fans don't like Roman Reigns getting a push, they should shut the hell up. What I said was, I like Roman Reigns. If the fans don't appreciate Roman Reigns or don't like him, shut the hell up and complaining to me, because you'll never sway my opinion. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone's allowed to have an opinion. And my opinion is, I like Roman Reigns. I always have. I always will. And if you don't like it, I don't care. This is my opinion. I'm not going to stand up for anything else but my opinion. But it came across as me saying that fans don't deserve the right to have an opinion. It's not what I meant. It's not what I said. That's not what this country is based on. It's not what WWE is based on. I'm a Roman Reigns fan. If no one else is, I don't care. I'm cheering for him, and that's the beauty of the company. If you don't want to cheer for him, don't cheer for him. If you want to cheer for Funaki or Daniel Bryan or Fandango, go nuts. Do your thing, man. But I'm just saying, I like Roman Reigns, and I'm sorry if I offended you, Egypt. That was not my intention. It's not really what I said.
All right, Jericho. It does not matter. All that matters is it's WrestleMania on Sunday. It's time to make the predictions. I will start with the André the Giant Memorial Bitter Rebel. and I love The Miz. I want to be friends with The Miz. I want to wear a scarf like The Miz. I am choosing The Miz.
Okay, Egypt, you're going to choose The Miz. I'm going to choose Ms. Dow. I'm going to choose his stunt double slash personal assistant. I think people are going nuts for him. I think people are excited to see him. I think people are going to cheer for Ms. Dow, and that's my prediction on who's going to win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. For those of you keeping score, take down your pen and paper and start making notes now of who's going to win this battle of predictions between Egypt and myself. Okay, so next is AJ Lee and Paige versus the Bella Twins. Really doesn't matter. I'm going to go AJ Lee and Paige. I think they want to keep AJ happy because of the CM Punk thing, and she's, of course, married to CM Punk. So let's say AJ and Paige. Egypt?
I agree with you. I love the Paige. She is my favorite. She is pale and sexy.
Okay. Let's go to the Intercontinental Championship ladder match. Bad News Barrett versus R-Truth versus Dolph Ziggler versus Dean Ambrose versus Luke Harper versus Daniel Bryan versus Stardust. I'm going to say that today's guest, Daniel Bryan, is going to win the Intercontinental Championship because I think it's important to give some steam back to the IC title, and he can defend that live. He's super popular, super over, and on house shows, you can always end the night with an IC title match, Daniel Bryan versus whoever. And I know because I worked with Kurt Angle for months and months and months, if not years, as the IC champion on top in the main events.
Okay, well, you love the Daniel Bryan. I am going to say that Dean Ambrose is going to win the championship. I love the Dean Ambrose. He wears little jean in the ring. He wears the muscle shirt in the ring. He's unorthodox. I say the Dean Ambrose.
Okay, and talking about some of the championships that needed more of a boosting, United States Championship, Rusev versus Cena. And where has Lana been? I guess it doesn't matter. I think Cena's going to win, and the same concept as to the reason why he's going to be main eventing the house shows as the U.S. champion.
I love John Cena. I worship the John Cena, and I agree with you. Where has Lana been? With me in my boudoir. I love Zelena. She loves the man with the accent, and she has been with me, hanging out with me in my armoire, and on my ass.
Okay, I hope Egypt is okay. Seth Rollins and Randy Orton. I think that Randy Orton is going to win. For reasons that I will explain later. Egypt?
Act like bad. Randy Orton will not win. He is the past. Seth Rollins is the future. Seth Rollins will win.
Okay, Undertaker, Bray Wyatt. I think it's pretty much all across the board. Undertaker will win. Undertaker needs to win after losing the streak last year. And Bray Wyatt's done a tremendous job in carrying the promos, but I think Undertaker has to come back and has to win in this one very important match, the WrestleMania match.
Oh, you are cool. You are such a stupid. You always like the old time wells. You always like the attitude era guys. You always like the respect. Pound the respect. Scoop on the spectacle. I say that Bray Wyatt will win. The young guy, he is the man for the future. He is the man who will have 70,000 cell phones lighting up the sky when his music plays.
All right, Sting versus Triple H. I think Sting is going to win. I think Triple H will give him a great match, and it'll be great to see Sting back. And he's pretty much has to win.
I agree, Sting will win. I don't expect a classic match. We have seen Sting for 10 years in TNA, so I think he will be happier to be at WrestleMania. He will work hard. Triple H will work hard. But I think time has passed him by. It will be a good match, not great.
All right, and then we get to the big one. World Heavyweight Championship. Brock Lesnar just resigned with the WWE versus Roman Reigns. I think they're going to go all the way with it. I think Roman Reigns is going to win the world title and finally making his quest come true. I like Roman Reigns. I don't care what anyone else says. I think he should be made crown champion at WrestleMania. And if he's not crown champion, then all this work that they've done for the last few months is for naught.
Ah, Jericho, you are forgetting. I think that Seth Rollins will beat Randy Orton. Then he will cash in the Money in the Bank match and beat Brock Lesnar, which will lead Brock Lesnar to turn babyface. And then you will have Brock Lesnar chase Seth Rollins for the title. And you will have Roman Reigns chase Seth Rollins for the Twitter, and you will have Randy Orton chase Seth Rollins for the Twitter. It gives many, many, options for the future, and makes Seth Rollins a very strong, unbeatable heel.
All right, Egypt. Well, you always have your opinions, and it's great to have you back on the show. So we will see who's going to win the war of predictions between Jericho and Egypt. Follow Egypt at Egypt the Janitor. We're glad to have him back. Like I said, I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Egypt has turned down his future career in the UFC, and we're glad to have him back here with us on Talk is Jericho.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
I always get really nervous when I'm setting up this portable studio, and I press the buttons. I hope it works. But I'm here with Daniel Bryan. And it's interesting because I pulled up here about the same time as you did, and you were outside. We're at the arena in Buffalo, and you're outside like greeting all the fans. And it's cold outside, and it's kind of windy and snowy. And is that something you do all the time?
Well, it depends on how many people are out there. Obviously, if there's hundreds of people out there, I don't do it. And mostly because it becomes too much, right? Like, you feel bad for all the people who are standing out there, and then they don't get anything if you're signing for some. Because I've tried that and just done as much as I can, and then, okay, I have to get into the building, right? But then people are like, oh, what about me? Oh, you know, and then it's almost better to not do any than to do some and then leave people out.
Yeah.
But, like, there was probably about 30, 40 people out there, and that's manageable, you know. And the fans are always really good as far as, like, if you go out there. The worst is if you don't say anything to them, and then they're just all huddling around. But if you say, hey, I'm going to get to everybody.
Right.
If you could have your phones ready for the pictures and your pens ready for the autographs, then it moves along really fast. And then they're really – I mean, people have been waiting out there since 9 o'clock and it's freezing cold outside, you know.
Yeah.
So that gives them an added extra experience, you know.
Sometimes I'll say, like, just a picture or just an autograph.
Uh-huh.
Because then, like, you know, if I remember when I was a kid, I used to do the same thing, whether you're waiting for bands or waiting for wrestlers. And if I could get anything, like, that was cool.
Yeah.
I find sometimes when there is a lot of people, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but you want a picture and an autograph, it's like, let's give everybody gets something.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
And especially, like, if it's a very large group of people. Like,
right.
You know, like, there are times we pull up to the building and there's four people out there. And if there's four people, I'll sign whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and take pictures to a certain degree. You know, there are some people who nothing is ever enough. Wait, can we do it where you're making this face
right.
and you put me in a headlock or whatever?
Can you do the yes pose?
Yeah.
Guys,
so,
come on.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing, too. I remember when I was a kid, like, if you had four or five guys and maybe, I don't know, Hogan would walk by or James Hetfield or something. If he signed for one guy or took one picture, that was the lucky one. It's
you
got it.
Right.
So sometimes I don't mind, like, not everyone gets something
right.
because there's always that experience. It's like, oh, you got a picture. That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the way. But
well, and that's especially to me for the kids, to just give them an experience that they can remember. Because I remember my first show, I was just thrilled It wasn't my first show, actually. It was like maybe when I was in high school. I was thrilled when Henry Godwin slapped my hand, right? Like, so it's like, he touched my hand, he touched my hand, you know, and that's just giving a kid that experience.
Sure,
you know?
Exactly, so. Yeah. We used to do it at the hotel in Winnipeg where we were too scared to talk to the really big guys.
Yeah.
So it was me and my friend, his name was Craig, and can you stand there with the camera, and I'll stand against the wall, and when one man gang walks by, yell his name and take the picture. And he's looking, and I'm standing in the background smiling too, right? So that was a good way to sneak in a picture if they want to get it. But so, I mean, you know, you're talking about the fans, and obviously you're very good with the fans. Are you happy to be back? It's been about 6 weeks or so since you returned from the injury. And how you feeling?
Yeah, so it's weird how I feel. I've never felt like this run down before, I guess. And I have been doing a lot, like, since I came back. So, like, my first night back, they had me wrestling two matches, like two-segment matches on SmackDown. Yeah. So it's just interesting because I don't feel like I'm just not sleeping very well. And I guess maybe because this is my first ever real break from wrestling where I was like, okay, I was in bed by, unless Brie had a really long drive, I was mostly in bed by 9:30 every night and waking up at like 6 or whatever, you know. And so now, you know, you get into that sleeping schedule and then you're ready to go. But then also, like, we didn't know how my neck was going to do when I came back, right? And that's the same. It's the same with any injury, I think. Like, if you have knee surgery, you don't know how your knee is going to do until you actually start putting pressure on it. And you can do as much rehab or whatever you want, you know, but until you actually get there and do it. And so now it's just this this thing of it being like, you know, getting pretty worn down, and I've never felt this way before. And like, but I'm also getting older, so I don't know if it's just like, but it's also like, sometimes it takes, when you've been off for, you know, 9 or 10 months, then coming back takes maybe some getting used to, and I don't know if I'm still in that adjustment process, you know.
You kind of have to build up your body callus.
Yeah
You know what I mean? I think it's easier to work 12 days in a row than it is to work a match and then wait 12 days and work.
Oh, absolutely
one.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. And I was actually talking, I think, with Triple H about this, about how it's way harder for him to come in and do a couple matches a year than it is to go in and be like on all the live events and all the TVs and stuff like that. Because then, so that first bump, like, I went down to the performance center and I took a bump and I was like, oh my gosh, like, it didn't feel like that when I first started bumping. Of course, I was 18, you know, but that was like a boxing ring, so it was hard as a rock, you know. And then, like, going here in these WWE rings, they're much nicer than a boxing ring, you know. And so you're like, but I took that first bump and I was like,
yeah, I know.
So
that happened to me. You know, I've been coming back to do, you know, I do a couple months. It was my first match back in January in a live event in Mobile or Montgomery against Luke Harper, and he gave me like a tackle or something, and that first bump, like you said, it felt like someone took a bucket of cold water and threw it in my face.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, right? Oh my gosh, you know. But let's talk about the journey. I mean, last time we spoke last year, you had just won the title and you're at the top of the world, and you know, you kind of, everything was going your way after this big long build of, you know, the office wouldn't give you the chance, and then the people demanded it, and then you get inserted into the main event of WrestleMania, and it's this huge, huge moment. And then about a month later, suddenly you're out.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to, like, what prompted that? What were you feeling?
Well, it wasn't as sudden as they made it sound.
Okay.
So, like, what had happened is, in June or July of 2013, I was wrestling Randy Orton and got a stinger in the match. And
I remember that on TV,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and they stopped the match, and it ended up, like, I nearly got in a fight with Hunter.
I was standing there watching.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever told you this. They had the cameras there, those Total Diva cameras.
Yeah.
And I know you're in it because of Breeze in it, and you're supporting your wife and stuff, but they were going in this room, and I was like, you guys need to not go in there with those cameras.
Right.
Like, well, I'm like, I'm telling you right now, this is not a reality show.
Right, yeah.
You will get your ass whipped.
Right.
Because I can just get there on that fucking camera. Because I saw it. You were face to face. Don't you ever stop my match. I've been doing this for years. I worked with an attached red. Do you remember that, or were you just so red?
No, I was so red. And it's funny because I don't think Bree had ever seen me that angry before, because yeah. typically I pride myself on being very level-headed. Yeah, I'm very laid back, but I also have a certain sense of pride that I've never had a match stop before, mm-hmm. no matter what happened, you know. And also, what kind of infuriated me too is this knowledge that Hunter finished a match with a torn quad, and right. then like this is, but because this Great is a different point. Era of like, okay, so we. You know, it's just a different era. And like Bree and my sister even said this. You do realize that you were completely in the wrong here. They were looking out for you and like for your health, but you have this, you know.
That's our mentality.
Yeah,
that's old school mentality.
That's the mentality.
I mean,
yeah.
you know, like you mentioned, you did work with a detached retina.
Yeah.
I wrestled a match with a broken arm.
Yeah.
You know, this is how we are taught and trained
right.
to work.
And if you don't keep going,
yeah.
then you're a sissy. That, right? you know, yeah. and the one thing I am not is I am not a sissy. You know, this may not be real. This may be, you know, entertainment, whatever
right.
it is. But, you know, yeah, that sort of mentality. But in that match, and I had actually done a suicide dive onto the floor, and I don't remember if I – but my head ended up hitting the barricade and, mm-hmm. you know, and that, but that had happened to me a million times, but I have a really strong neck. I've spent years bridging and all that kind
of
stuff.
I think it might be one of those ones where you had to move.
Yeah. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And then I did, but I felt fine. I felt like a little jolt down my arm, but I was like, oh, no big deal. I did the top rope drop kick. I landed and all of a sudden I couldn't get up. And I was just like, which was scary. You know, I couldn't feel my arms. And
in
then
the
like,
middle of the match.
In the middle of the match. And then Randy's there. And, you know, Randy's got a temper more than anything else. And he's like, Dan, what are you doing? Dan, what are you doing? Like, and now he's getting mad. And I just can't get up. And then so I finally got up. The feeling came back in my left arm pretty quick. But the feeling in my right arm just stayed. It was just like limp by my side. And so anyways, that had happened, and then the feeling came back in my right arm. But after that, they sent me to get an MRI and all this kind of stuff, and there was the disc was compressing on the nerve. But it wasn't really causing any problems other than that one thing. And who knows how long – because sometimes a disc can be doing something like that, but you don't have any symptoms for a long time. But then after that, all of a sudden I started getting these shooting pains down my arm. Mm. And so the ulnar nerve was pinched. And so it was getting to the point – it was getting – especially that European tour that November –
those are long tours.
Yeah, and it was really bad as far as like I wasn't sleeping, because anytime my neck moved, I had to keep my neck in a certain position, because otherwise I'd get these horrible shooting pains down my arm, just that nerve pain that like it's weird because it's like a jolt of like electricity
yeah.
that goes down your arm, but it's like it was like this constant pain. And so, you know, we have the awesome massage lady and chiropractor when we go over to England, right? Mm-hmm. And they were working on me every day just trying to give me some relief, right? And
the chiropractor's name is Pete Townsend, by the way.
Yeah,
which is the best name ever.
Yeah. And so, then I got an epidural injection. The first one helped a lot, you know, just to relieve some of the swelling around the nerve. And then that freed up. And I was, for about 3 weeks, I had no pain whatsoever, which was a huge improvement. And then they went in to do a second epidural. And when they did it, the doctor hit the spine with the needle. So it's the epidural, they do like an MRI guided, or it's like an image guided thing. And it's supposed, but with, and they numb up your back and everything. And they go to do the epidural injection. And I'm laying there, like my back is completely numb. And then all of a sudden, like I feel this excruciating pain. And I don't cuss a whole lot, but then all of a sudden I screamed out, you know, and like he was shaken up. I was shaken up. And,
So I'm assuming he wasn't supposed to touch the spine.
No, you're not supposed to touch. You know, you're.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
You're. Yeah,
wow.
And so, yeah. So then, yeah, and then they asked me if I wanted him to continue because we're already like, you know. But he was a little shaken up, and I said, yeah. But then that one didn't give me any relief, and so, and I don't know if the touching of the spine actually aggravated it or what. But then they didn't have me sign these consent papers when I went in, and so like immediately after, they're all like, hey, okay, oh, we forgot to have you sign this. Can you sign this? I was like, you know, I was just worried that like, you know, my arm was just gonna be like flopping just, by my
yeah.
side or something, you know. But you know. So then I didn't – they wanted to do a series of three epidurals, and I didn't do the third one just after the horrible experience of that second one. And then
– well, just so you know, I had a herniated disc in my back, and I
yeah.
went for epidurals. Same thing. First one – not the same thing as far as the pain, but the first one worked.
Uh-huh.
Second one, okay. Third one, nothing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a cure. It was a Band-Aid.
Yes. And that's all it is. It's just, you know, reducing the inflammation around there. But it's, especially with what we do, it's going to come back. And like, so anyways, then the pain started coming back. And they said this whole time, Doc Amon had told me this whole time, like, we can do the surgery now, but you don't need the surgery now. It's one of those things is you can choose when you want to do the surgery. But as long as it's just pain going down your arm, you're fine. So we get through WrestleMania, and that was actually the hardest part of that whole thing, was that I'm dealing with this thing that really only Doc Amon knows about, you know. Doc Amon and Brie, and like, because
Vince,
you
know, didn't know, or Triple H didn't
know. Yeah, and I because you don't want any of that pulled from you, right? And especially there was a point where it was getting bad after the Rumble, and at that point I really didn't have anything for WrestleMania. All of that just kind of happened because of the, you know, the series of events that went down. But then it was starting to get bad. But then all of a sudden now I'm in the best spot of my career, right? And like, I'm not gonna, you know, all of a sudden be like, well, guys, this is getting pretty bad, like, you know. But the pain, it was bad, but it was manageable, and I was getting through. But then all of a sudden, probably about 2 weeks before I ended up getting the surgery, it turned to weakness. And they said when it turns to weakness, that's when you need to get the surgery, because then you're at risk of never getting it back.
Atrophy.
Yeah, and so what had happened is I went out to the car. We don't have automatic locks on our car. I think I'm the only probably WWE wrestler.
What do you got, like a 76 Chevy or something?
No, we have a 2010 Honda Fit that doesn't have automatic locks.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And so, like,
I didn't know there were, they still made cars.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's $3,000 cheaper if you don't get the automatic locks, and this is a very inexpensive car anyways.
Okay.
And so, so, you know, I'm just kind of thrifty, and so... And so anyways, I went out to unlock the car, and I couldn't, like, I had to use my left hand to unlock the car. And then I was just dropping things all the time, and I just thought it was hand weakness. But then when they went and tested it, it was actually also tricep weakness, because the ulnar nerve runs from your neck down through the back of your tricep and into your back pinky and then into your thumb. And I had no tricep strength. But, you know, you can compensate for that. For example, I could do a push-up, you know, but that's because I'm recruiting other muscles to do that. And so,
which is another typical wrestling trick. When you have an injury, you overcompensate with other sides, which usually makes another injury happen.
Yeah. And so, that week that I wrestled Kane at Extreme Rules after WrestleMania, and this is after I had realized I couldn't
put the key in the lock.
And so I talked to Vince's guy. I don't know if it's Vince's guy or Triple H's guy, the ART guy. Who's really, really good, right? And he was asking me how I was doing, because he had worked on me over WrestleMania. And I said, yeah, this thing happened with the... And he said, you need to talk to somebody. You know, because I've always been like, okay, if I'm hurt, I don't necessarily want to tell the WWE doctor. You know, like, I know some people, their experiences are like when you tell a WWE doctor that you're hurt, they're like, well, you know, we can do this to keep you going. My experience is different. Every time I've had a concussion, or the doctors have known I've had a concussion, it's like they stop me from wrestling right away, right? And like, I'm at this point where I'm like, okay, I'm the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. I'm at the highest point of my career. The last thing I want to do is have them stop me from wrestling. So
did you feel any of that during that WrestleMania match, the triple threat? Did you feel any issues, or were you okay during that whole
match? So it was essentially getting myself ready for that. Yeah, within the match, I was always fine in matches.
Gotcha.
In matches, I was always fine. It was like, for example, WrestleMania 30 was specifically difficult because I did the Triple H match and then had that long rest period. And then usually after matches was when it would get the worst.
Wow,
and then so then it's all of a sudden trying to get that function back, you know, as far as like without being in pain and all that kind of stuff. And then Undertaker loses, and then the crowd's just like dead, you know, and you're just like, oh no, like, you know. And so
but that happened the other night too at the Garden. We had the Hulk Hogan appreciation, the greatest appreciation, respect. They raised the banner to the ceiling,
yeah,
of Hulk Hogan, and then you got to come out there for the main event.
but It's interesting because, you know, I know Roman Reigns gets a lot of slack for stuff from, you know, some fans or whatever, but I believe strongly that he's going to do really well, and I think that night specifically
in the garden
proved it, because that's kind of it can be a rougher crowd.
Absolutely.
And especially at that point we were well over 3 hours into the show. They had just seen this awesome appreciation thing. When he came out, he got mixed boos and mixed cheers, but in that tag match, by the time I finally tagged Roman, the crowd went crazy.
Wow.
And that finishing stretch, people were there for it, like treated him like he was main eventing WrestleMania,
like a legit superstar.
Yeah, and so
during the match, you're okay. So then the next week, the thing with Kane, then you have a dropping stuff.
And then the match at Extreme Rules happens, and then I'm talking with Doc Amon, and he talks to Dr. Maroon and that sort of thing. And then I think that week they called me and told me I didn't even have a choice. They said
you're
getting surgery, and. And so,
when it's really serious like that, like with Edge, it was the same thing. Remember, Edge
was
Vince called him and said, "You're never wrestling again." And he's
like,
"What?" Like just out of the blue.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say this too. I mean, you're mentioning about how you're at the biggest peak of your career and you're about to go into WrestleMania. You're the champion, and it's, you know, Fandango is a good example.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, when he was really hot, he was scheduled to win the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah.
He got a concussion.
Yeah.
He was pulled.
Yeah.
Things change. Different stories come up, and Never had another chance to do
right.
it. That could have been the case. If you don't stay with it, who knows where the streams are going to go.
Right, exactly. And the thing is Doc Amon and Dr. Maroon are the ones who called me. Vince didn't know yet.
He still didn't know.
But it was because it was one of those things where they had a conference call with the medical staff. The first person they wanted to tell is me.
Right.
The first person I texted actually was John Cena, because I was like, hey, do I need... Like, this is what they've told me. I told Doc I didn't want to do the surgery. I want to wait until after SummerSlam or whenever it is that I lose the title.
Right.
And so he said, well, call and talk to Vince about it and tell him that you know, because I didn't want to get the surgery. That same fear, but not only that, that same sort of pride that
we talked about earlier. Yeah.
That, like, okay.
You're the champ.
I'm the champ. When I was the Ring of Honor champion, I had separated my shoulder and torn a couple tendons, and I wrestled for 4 months like that, and until I could drop the title to Homicide. And then when I dropped the title, then I took 3 months to rehab and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And that was my mentality. Like, okay, I've been dealing with this pain for the last, you know, however many months. Another couple months. And then
so what did John say?
So John just said, hey, call and talk to Vince and tell him what you think. So I called. And
were you asking John's advice, because he's a longtime champion here?
Yeah, I asked John's advice to see, like, I don't know what this is. I've never been in this situation.
Yeah.
So the doctor tells me this. At this point, Vince doesn't know. Is it better that he finds out from the medical staff in a memo the next day,
right,
or is it better that I call him? And I never called him before. I didn't even have his number. That was part of the reason why I was and it was weird too, because it was relatively late at night, and you know Vince, he's up at all hours.
Mm-hmm.
And John had sent me two numbers, right? And I didn't know which was which, and so one said work, and so I thought, oh, so I called, and it's like literally the office number, and like nobody. Like to Vince's office, but it's like
office hours or 10 a.m.
Yeah, but he actually picks up.
Oh, really?
And and he was confused. Like somebody who was in the meeting told me, it was like, yeah, it was weird because like nobody ever calls him there. Like if you're gonna call him and you have his private number, you call his cell. And but then like he's like, oh, what's this? And then they were in the middle of some sort of meeting, and then he said, no, you can't.
So what did you tell him? Like, I got this report.
Yeah. So I said, you'll need to talk to Doc Amon, and you'll need to, you know, talk to Dr. Maroon and stuff. But this is what they've told me. I don't want to get this surgery. I think I'm good enough to keep going until this. And then he pretty much said, like, okay, well, I'll talk to the doctors and we'll talk about it on, you know, on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the plan was to never strip me of the title. Like the plan, because for example, had we done this surgery right when it had happened, right?
Yeah.
The recovery time is supposed to be 6 to 8 weeks, and the plan was that we'd get through until that time, and then
just kind of fake it instead.
But what had happened is, and this is, you know, a bunch of different people have different you know, opinions on what had kind of happened. My physical therapist, his opinion is this. The nerve was pinched for so long that it took a long time for it to heal and recover. He said nerves heal typically at a rate of about an inch per month, right? And so that's a very long time when you're talking about C6, C7 in your vertebrae and then going all the way down.
You're talking about an inch of growth, like growing down the whole arm, which is like 14 inches.
So that's a long time. And I was like, oh, and especially for how long it had been pinched. But then, you know, there was talk that maybe I needed to get a second surgery with my elbow and all this kind of stuff. And so what was originally supposed to be 6 to 8 weeks turned into whatever it was, 9 months. And so
in your knowledge, has a champion ever had to, has a champion ever gone down with injury in this company?
I don't know.
I was thinking about that. I can't remember if anybody ever has. I mean, Edge was the champ when they told me he never wrestled. So he just had to give up the belt too.
Yeah.
So maybe Edge and yourself, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So and, when you got the initial surgery, but then they told you that you might need another surgery?
Yeah, because what had happened was it wasn't getting any better.
Oh.
The weakness wasn't improving. So it was weird, too. Like, originally, like, the first thing, I wake up from surgery, right, and the first thing I'm doing is I'm feeling my fingers and stuff and, like, trying to feel, like, if I have strength back. And I was like, oh, man, it's way improved from what it was. Like, I couldn't even keep my fingers open if you just pressed a little bit. Right.
Right.
And so, I was testing. I'm like, oh, that's already way better. But and it was getting better. It felt like it was getting better. And then all of a sudden, so they had me 10 days after the surgery. I was back on TV doing a promo or something like that.
This is like April or something?
No, the surgery happened in May.
Okay.
They were on the European tour. When they came back from Europe, I was on that next TV. But what had happened is I'd put like a bag in Bree's mom's car. She was taking me to the airport, and I wasn't supposed to lift anything over 5 pounds, right? But, you know, I'm just traveling, so you have to, right? So I have this backpack, and I put it in the thing. All of a sudden, I felt like this tinge go back down my arm, and then all of a sudden, things got worse. And then so they sent me back to Dr. Maroon that week, and then he's trying to find whatever it is that's going wrong in there, and then it kept getting worse, and then they're like, for the first time in my life, I took prescription pain pills during that. That was actually worse than when I had the original injury. So this is 2 weeks after the surgery. I was staying in the Pittsburgh Airport Hotel. So there was like that, the Pittsburgh Airport they have, I don't know what it is. It's a Hyatt or something, but it's attached to the
right
hotel.
On site.
Yeah, it's right on site. And I had to drag my bags there, and literally I didn't know if I was going to make it. Like, I kept having to stop, and my arm was just like, my arm was killing me. Mm-hmm. And like that night I probably slept like 30 minutes, you know, and then so much pain. And so, I pride myself on being somebody who can handle a lot of pain. Get to a successful level like at this, and like,
absolutely,
you have to have a certain amount of pain tolerance, and
I find as well that like, we know our bodies so well that when you are feeling that pain, you know something's severely wrong.
And so
it's like we know the difference between you tweaked it and something's messed up,
right? Yeah. And so so then that was going on, and then they sent me home with like all these pain pills, right? And like, I took them for one day. It's the first time I'd ever taken like a pain pill or anything like that.
You don't drink?
I don't drink or anything like that. And it was, I did it, and I didn't take, you know, the full number, but then after 2 days, I was just like, I feel horrible. Like, just mentally, I felt horrible. And then, so they were keeping an eye on it and trying different things and this or that. And then finally the pain went away, but the strength was still not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it was weird because initially there was only, a lack of strength in my tricep in my hand. But then all of a sudden, after this thing, 2 weeks after the surgery, now I was having bicep weakness.
Oh.
And it was weird. And it was weird stuff. Like, I would turn my neck to the side, and I would have no strength in my arm. I would turn my neck the other way, and my bicep was functioning. It was, Dr. Maroon couldn't explain it. And he was like, if I didn't know you and couldn't, like, you know, there's tests if somebody's faking something, right?
Right.
If I didn't know and I didn't, like, if I couldn't see this myself, I'd think you were faking it.
Wow.
So
that's really, it's like, we've never seen this before.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but I mean, like, I was talking with Hunter about this, you know, while, after the surgery thing, and then the nervous system is there's still so much we don't know about it, right? Yeah. Like Hunter had this thing where like he was having a similar kind of issue, but there's all these nerves like in your armpit, for example, and like the pathways, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So he had like they were going to go do something to him, but then all of a sudden this guy got in there and messed around with his armpit, and all of a sudden his shoulder was like, or his bicep wasn't functioning, but all of a sudden his bicep was functioning. But then all of a sudden that rooted out the real problem, which was something in his shoulder or something, you know, and then
your
like
body's attached in very strange ways. Right?
And so, it was just, you know, a very frustrating process.
Well, of course. But so this is months down the line. And what were they saying? Like, just take time and rehab and it'll get better? Or?
Yeah. So they thought I'd be ready for Money in the Bank.
Which was?
It was probably it was July, maybe.
Okay,
so
July.
Probably about 6 to 7 weeks after the surgery. They thought,
okay.
They thought I'd be ready. Maybe it was 8 weeks after the surgery. They thought I'd be ready. And if I could get ready for that, then they wouldn't need to strip me of the title, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it became clear maybe a couple weeks before that I wasn't going to be ready for Money in the Bank. And so then they... Like we don't have a timetable for his return. We have to strip him of the title, that sort of thing. And so,
how did you feel when that went down?
Do you know what? I thought if they were going to, if I had to do the surgery, I thought they should have stripped me of the title right away.
Right.
With my thinking being, just with the whole story and everything that we were doing on TV, it didn't make any sense for the authority to let me keep it. Right.
Mm.
And then like. Like, what is my point of view as a baby face, right? No, let me keep it. I mean, I can't defend it. You know, like, you want to defend the title for the people, and the people deserve that. And that's what they were saying on TV. The authority was saying, the people deserve a fighting champion. Well, what's my response? No, I don't yeah, like yeah, you guys. Yeah,
it's mine.
Yeah. So, you know.
It's funny how things get flip-flopped sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Of course they do.
Yeah.
And now you're the baby faces and I'm the heel, right?
Right, yeah. But it also, I thought, okay, well, if I don't have the pressure to come back, then, you know, I thought the whole time, okay, if I'm doing the surgery, if you guys are expecting me back at Money in the Bank and I'm ready, great, because then we can do they ended up doing a Money in the Bank match for the title anyways.
Right.
And so then it's like, it can put it up, I can make a surprise return or something like that, and then win the title back, and then it's yay, right? Yeah.
But if not, there's no pressure.
Yeah, then if not, then there's no pressure. And so, so I wasn't bothered when they stripped me of the title. It was more like, oh, I wish we just would have done this weeks ago.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, continuing the conversation with Daniel Bryan. We've been talking about your neck injury and the two surgeries that kept you out of the ring for almost a year. There were a lot of rumblings about what was happening with you. Is he getting worse? Is he getting better? Is he coming back? Is he retiring? Was that ever discussed that you wouldn't be able to come back?
The discussion was this. We do not know what's going on with you. And if we can't fix this, you can't wrestle.
And that's a scary thought.
Yeah, it's
because you think doctors know. Like, I just got to see the doctor.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. One of the – so I was dealing with kind of two doctors. One was Dr. Maroon in Pittsburgh.
He's a WWE official.
Yep, and he works with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But he – because his specialty is kind of neck stuff for the arm – the issue – because essentially the issue was the strength coming back in my arm. For that, he sent me to a guy named Dr. Buter. Nope, maybe Doc. I don't know which doctor was in where. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
There's so many, right?
Yeah, there's so many. So, but
doctor
he sent me
two.
To his doctor in Pittsburgh, who works with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who's an upper arm specialist and knows the nerves in the arm really well. And then they said originally they thought, okay, you're going to need to do this surgery at your elbow because I have something where the nerve crosses the elbow, and it was called a double crush. Where okay, we think what we thought happened, because it made sense, was that your nerve was pinched at the neck. But it also turns out that it's also pinched at the elbow, which is called a double crush, which is why – but that doesn't explain to me why my tricep was weak, because that's above this – point or whatever, you know. But they said, he said, we think you're going to have to get this surgery, but we're going to give you some time to see if things are getting better or not, because sometimes things just take time. Well, things weren't getting better. And then so then I was like, well, instead of flying me back and forth to Pittsburgh all the time, there's certainly got to be somebody who's good at this in Phoenix. And so, yeah, they found this guy who's really good, works with a bunch of baseball players, worked with Nolan Ryan. He's got this awesome picture in his office of when I don't know if you're a baseball fan or not, but when I was a kid, Nolan Ryan was an old pitcher.
Yeah.
And Robin Ventura, like, I think Nolan Ryan hit him with a pitch or something like that. Robin Ventura, this guy for the White Sox, who's like young and spunky, like he's like, oh, screw Nolan Ryan, I'm going to go. And he goes to fight Nolan Ryan, right? And 43 years old.
Ventura, on the mound?
Yeah. This happens sometimes in baseball. Yeah. Like, yeah, you charge. And so anyways, Nolan Ryan was awesome. Like, a 40-something years old, he just grabs him in a headlock and starts punching him in the face. And I was like, he's got that picture of Nolan Ryan punching him in the face. And signed by Nolan Ryan, like, thanks for the surgery, doc, or whatever, you know. And so, like, you know, he's worked
he's
with.
He's been around.
He's been around. And he said essentially, his thing was this. He sent me – we did a bunch of nerve conduction studies, and he said, I cannot guarantee you that this surgery will work. But this is going to give you – if they've determined everything in your neck is clear, like everything in your neck is clear, this may be our best chance if things aren't improving.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that, and then they sent me back to Pittsburgh to get a second opinion from Dr. Maroon's guy, and then he thought, well, I'm not sure. And so they're kind of going back, and then the guy in Phoenix had said to me, he said, listen, I can understand how frustrating this must be for you, because he said the same thing you said. You look to us and you want a definitive answer, and unfortunately I can't give you a definitive answer. I can give you what I think, mm-hmm. right? And the doctor in Pittsburgh can give you what he thinks, but realistically we don't know. And like, that was this terrifying thing.
That's the scariest thing.
That's the scariest thing. And then, so then we're looking at, we're just going to do the surgery. This is October, maybe. I don't know if it was September. September, October. And we're just going to do the surgery because I'm doing all this physical. I'm trying everything, like legitimately everything. I'm doing physical therapy. I'm doing ART. I'm getting acupuncture. I'm going to a naturopath and all this kind of stuff, right? And literally, I was scheduled to set the surgery date on the Friday, go in and meet with the guy in Phoenix, and like, we were going to sit, he was going to talk to me about it, talk me through it and all that kind of stuff, and then schedule the surgery the next week. That was decided on a Wednesday or a Thursday. I called my naturopath because I was going in.
Oh, what's a naturopath?
A naturopath is somebody who does like natural healing methods,
okay.
right? You know, and so like, I go to him, like, for example, when I'm sick, as opposed to going to a doctor who's going to prescribe you prescription medication or whatever like that, he will try natural things
natural,
first,
like,
and
leaves
he,
and roots.
Yeah, and like he believes that there are definitely places for prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
but there's no reason to go in with like something major when you can, you know. Okay, if you just do this and you drink this tea, and then if you take some of this, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get.
It's the same reason they told me I needed back surgery, and I started in yoga, and that cleared up all my problems.
Yeah.
Doctors sometimes have a tendency to go drug surgery, whereas there is other ways around
it.
Yeah,
because that's the methodology that they're taught, you know.
Right.
And so, like, you know, like begets like, kind of, you know what I mean? So, like, when you go and you learn from somebody, like, and you spend however many years doctors spend in school learning from people who have learned the same methodology, it's hard. And then when
it becomes gospel.
Yeah. And so, but then there's the case of, like, Steve Jobs. Right, who completely believed in this natural cures, and if he would have just taken this thing, you know, and just would have had somebody who guided him to say, hey, listen, the natural stuff will get you so far, but if it's not working there, mm-hmm. you need to go do this. And mm-hmm. that's kind of my naturopath. He's good like that. So anyways, he said, well, before you do this, he works with Carson Palmer, who was the quarterback for the Phoenix Cardinals. He said, before you do this,
before you get the surgery,
Carson had this horrible shoulder injury or something like that. He couldn't even barely pick up a football. And then he went to this guy in Denver who does a thing called muscle activation technique. And all of a sudden he was playing a couple weeks later. Mm. So I don't know if this guy can help you. But so my naturopath called the guy, talked to him, and he said, I'll see him on you know, I'll see him on this day, and if I can help him, I'll let him know. But if I can't help him, I'll also let him know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if what I do works, I should be able to tell just within the 2 hours.
Now, before you went and saw him, was there ever a time when it crossed your mind, like, I might not be able to go back to wrestling?
Yes, and especially with the doubt of everybody had about that second surgery. Mm-hmm. Like, this thought that, like, the second surgery isn't...
Were you thinking? Like, let's say you couldn't wrestle. What were you like? What do I do? Am I going to become a booker or go backstage and be an agent?
No.
Overseas and be a Peace Corps?
Yeah, I mean, probably more likely Peace Corps stuff, but not. But you know, when you get married, you can't necessarily.
That's true. Yeah.
You can't just go off and join the Peace Corps, right? Unless your wife, if she decides to quit wrestling, then you go off and join the Peace Corps with you, right? And so, we had been thinking about that as far as like, and we legitimately like, okay, what are we going to do? And not only that, the issue why I couldn't wrestle was because I didn't have any strength in my right arm. Right. So, and I have no education. The good thing is that everything I have is paid off, right? The mm-hmm. house, my car, everything like that. And I've been able to save a decent amount of money. So I could, if I wanted to, go to school and get another job. But the thing is I don't have, like, I have things that I'd like to do. But I don't have – there's no job that, like –
Involves using a hand.
Yeah. I'd love to go do that. You know what I mean? And so, like, for example, I'm interested in cob building, like natural building. So it's building
– Cob?
Cob building. So it's like essentially you mix clay, dirt, and straw, and you build these houses. They're very inexpensive to build. They can last for hundreds of years, right? And you can – anybody can do it, right? It doesn't take much, but to be able to go learn how to do that, and then maybe they do these awesome things where they'll take it to Haiti and stuff
right,
and they'll go and they'll build these cob houses in Haiti. But then also the idea of like, okay, here's this guy who was a wrestler and that sort of thing, and he has chosen, not because he's been forced to, because he spent all his money, but he has chosen to live this simple life, right? Mm-hmm. And just give people that... It's because sometimes in the media, our minds get brainwashed into this is what you should want, right?
Yeah, of course.
You should work for this because if you keep working for this, then you can have this multi-million-dollar house, and then you can have all these cars, and then you can have
that's success.
Then you can have a wife with fake breasts, and that's like, and that's and you know, and that's what success is, right? This is success.
Sure, yeah.
But like, you and I both know people with all of that who aren't necessarily happy. Right.
You know? And we also know people that live in a farm and grow corn and have the best life ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was kind of my thinking as far as like when I think of things after wrestling, that's what I've always thought. But I always thought, I was hoping it'd be much later than this.
And plus, you'd like to be able to have both hands to do it.
Yeah, if I'm going to build a cob house, it's going to be hard with one hand.
There's Brian, the one-handed cob builder.
Yeah. That was kind of what I was thinking. But, it's just even hard to wrap your brain around it.
Of course.
I started – it was weird. I started going to – and doing some grappling. So I've done like grappling and kickboxing for a while now, you know. But I went to the MMA lab, and which is where Benson Henderson trains.
Where's that at?
In Phoenix.
Okay.
And the jiu-jitsu coach there is a guy named John Crouch, who's really, really awesome. I have never – all the grappling I've done, I've never put on a gi. Right? Ever. Like, I've never put on a gi. I've always grappled no gi. And so, but I thought, like, okay, they were having me doing all these hand exercises and stuff, but I didn't feel like it was enough. And I thought maybe the problem is that I'm not, because my body is used to doing more, right? And so, okay, you're going to do 3 sets of 10 of pinches like this, right? You know, and like, and maybe my hand is like, this isn't going to do anything for me. Right, like, you're used to doing all this stuff, right? So I went in and tried to do that, and you know, everybody stayed away from my neck and all that kind of stuff. But the idea gripping a gi is going to work all those intrinsic muscles in your hand and all that kind
of
stuff,
which
and,
is a big part of jiu-jitsu, right?
You're gripping
the guy's collar,
and it was funny because I am decent at no gi grappling. I went in with a gi, and all of a sudden I'm a beginner because I'm like, okay, I can just escape like this. Ugh. No, I can't, because here's a gi choke. Like, they choke you with the collar, and it's like,
is that legal?
Yeah. And so, I started doing that, but then also with the idea of, you know, and this is sometimes how twisted my mind is. maybe I can start wrestling with just one hand, right? With one arm, and I can find ways to like to where it would be good to and
make
interesting.
It a gimmick, yeah.
And like in the same way that Zach Gowen was, and just this idea that like, okay, because in grappling you could legitimately do that, right? Like,
my
original grappling coach, his name is Neil Melanson, and he would sometimes grapple you without using his arms because he needed to challenge himself, right? So if he's working with somebody who's like me, who is he was also like 250 pounds, right? So he's this gorilla of a man, right? But he would work from the bottom and not use his arms and try to maneuver me with just his legs and working on his hip movement and triangles and stuff like that. And that was kind of my inspiration for that. Well, maybe I can do this whole thing and do it without my arm or without needing to be strong, because my style, I don't pick a lot of guys up anyways.
Yeah.
You know, so I can get away with like a lot of kicks and stuff like that. But then even having it be, that's part of my story is that I don't.
Well, you know, that happened to Acai, right? Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah.
That butcher doctor in WCW snapped a nerve in his arm and his hand went, I think he's got a little bit of back, but for a while he was working with one hand because they told him you have to quit.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, screw that.
Right.
So he came back and did it. So,
yeah. You know. And so people had told me that you might not be able to wrestle again.
Yeah.
But then in my mind, I'm thinking like, well, I'm not quite ready to not wrestle again. And so maybe if I do this one
off, right. Yeah. You'd be good better with three limbs than most guys are with four. So you go see this doctor in Denver and what does he say?
It's interesting because my strength was stuck at like 55% of my right arm.
Right.
They needed it at 80 to 85% for me to get cleared. And so he works on me, and it's weird because it's like ART kind of mixed with – it was pretty painful actually. So it was like – so he digs in with ART until we can get the strength back in my hand. And my ART guy can do this, right? He could get the strength back in my hand. So could my acupuncture guy. So could a bunch of people. But it would last for 20 minutes. And then it just goes, right? So he would do, like he'd press into the muscles and nerves and stuff, and he would get the strength back for just a little bit. But then he'd stretch it out, and that would weaken it. And then he'd do it again, and then he'd stretch it out, and he'd weaken it. And until he stretched it out, and it stayed strong. And so he did this process for like 2 hours. It was a little bit brutal, but my strength after I left there lasted for 5 days, which for me, and then all of a sudden it went, right? And then it went and it was back to whatever. And so I went back to see him again. And he told me this first time, he said, I'm pretty sure that we can get you back with this.
Oh, right? Mr. Phil,
he said, I don't know how long this first one will last, but I'm anticipating it will take 2 to 3 visits to get it to where it'll just stay, right? And so I went and saw him a second time, and I've never been back to see him since.
Two times. After 8 months of doctors and possible surgeries.
Yeah. And so he's not even a doctor. He's a physical therapist. He works for the Denver Broncos. Right. And this is part of my mentality of like, how much schooling do you need if you're specifically working with something like this? Right. So like he has found something that works at least to a certain extent.
Right. Right?
And so like it worked for Carson Palmer, who's a professional athlete, right? Like he is like those NFL players, right? If you look at like the worst NFL player, he was the stud of his high school, of his college,
that's
and
right.
then he gets to the NFL and he's the worst, right? You know? So you look at somebody like Carson Palmer, who I think has been on the All-Pro team or something, like how good of an athlete is
that's
this guy?
Top.
And so like he's able to get this guy, you know, to that, like with me, it was two sessions, you know, and I don't know if it'll work for everybody. I just know that it worked for me, and it was weird because Regal's got this witch doctor guy in Atlanta. Yeah.
I've known him for years.
So
he deals with the fascia. And all that stuff.
And so it was funny because while I was going through all this, Regal sent me to him, and he said, "Listen, when you go and you see him, it's gonna feel like a bunch of BS." Mm-hmm. But don't go by what you're thinking when you're in there. Go by how you feel after, right? And so he worked with me, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, it's a bunch of BS, you know. But then afterwards, I did feel a little bit better, and it didn't necessarily help my neck, but it helped some other things that he had noticed as far as like my hip alignment and all that kind of stuff. So I think with that stuff, it can help you so much, but at some point you need something more, right? And this guy was kind of the same thing because like when he'd stretch me and like press down to show how weak I was, it felt like he was pressing harder, right? Like if you just lift your shoulder to the side and I press down on it really hard and go and like, oh, you're weak, and then okay, lift your shoulder to the side and then you press down, but you just like kind of pretend to press down, like at how strong you are, you know, like that's what I was thinking. And I like when I left there, I was like, hey, you know, I don't know, but then I was like, holy cow, like the proof is
it's unbelievable
in the results.
It's like I said with actually DDP's falling in that in that witch doctor, but with yoga.
Yeah.
It legitimately and this, I was the last guy in the world to want to do yoga, and I started doing it and it cured me of everything.
Yeah.
Now at 44 I feel more limber, better, less pain than when I was 34.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just natural medicine.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's interesting too, because our society and culture, and especially with like within entertainment and wrestling, is so looks based, right? Like, oh, you want to look a certain way. You want to, you know, like that sort of thing. But reality, UFC fighters don't look like bodybuilders. Right? They're functional, right? You know, and like, you know, a 155 pound guy, he may be very lean or whatever, but like Benson Henderson is super limber, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that he's able to escape so many submissions and everything is because of his mobility and flexibility.
Sure.
And there's none of those guys who are like most of us here in WWE where, you know,
you're muscle bound.
Yeah, we're muscle bound and just tight, and just like even somebody like Seth Rollins, right, who works all the time on his mobility and all that kind of stuff. He does it for CrossFit, but like if you put his mobility next to your average UFC fighter, I bet
absolutely.
Very, very limited, you know. Absolutely. And so that's one of the things that I've never been a body guy, for example, but we still go out there in spandex and you still have
you still got some big muscle, you know?
But I mean, like, you still have to go out there and you don't want to be fat.
Well, yeah, yeah. You know, and the funny thing is, like, if we went for an insurance test to get insurance, we would both be categorized obese.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", 200, 210.
Yeah.
That's the obese category. Right. It's like, I'm not obese, according to the stats are.
Yeah.
But you, like you mentioned, it's just this amazing kind of almost a miracle thing, and you came back, and you touched on, I know we got to finish up soon, but you touched on Roman Reigns, and you came back at Fastlane it started at the Royal Rumble, where Daniel Bryan's back and you get thrown out, and then they kind of take out the fallout on Roman. And even in my experience, when I would tweet something about, you know, like, Roman's great, or they'd be, oh, you're just a WWE sycophant, you're sucking Vince's ass. I'm like, no, I believe in this guy.
Yeah.
How's that sucking ass? You know what I mean? How did you feel about that when Roman was getting booed, and then when they kind of had you guys go toe-to-toe?
Okay, so I thought it was overreactionary. I was thrilled with just the possibility that I might be in the main event again, right? So you have to take some things with a grain of salt, you know, like, okay, I don't necessarily agree with this direction, right? Like so for example, last year I did agree with the direction, because
as far as going to a three-way,
because Batista and Randy, after the Royal Rumble last year, fans did not get behind Batista,
right?
But after the Royal Rumble this year, The first show, the Monday after the Royal Rumble, was snowed out. So they did this awesome backstage thing with Roman and Brock and Paul Heyman and that sort of thing. But the next Raw was in Denver, and people were cheering Roman Reigns in Denver.
Well, and that weekend I was in Calgary and Edmonton, and I watched that match, and they were going nuts for Roman.
They were going nuts for Roman, right? And so, and most of the TVs going into Fastlane, they were cheering Roman. The only reason why maybe they didn't is because they also really liked me, and there wasn't this like last year. It was like, Daniel Bryan, we're pushing. We don't want to see these guys. We want to see Daniel Bryan. They just were cheering for me because now we're directly opposed to each other. I thought it was an overreaction, but I was thrilled at the potential of maybe getting another chance to be in the main event of WrestleMania.
Because you didn't know for sure what was going to happen leading into
and
it.
So anyways, but, you know, as much as everybody wants the main event WrestleMania. If this is the plan that they're going with, I think they made the right decision. Like I said, Madison Square Garden is a notoriously tough crowd, and especially after over 3 hours, and they were there for him, you know, after
we've seen that. Yeah. You know, I thought it was actually pretty interesting. Not going to say ballsy on Vince's part, but it was a classic Vince move. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're cheering Daniel Bryan, and there's some fallout on Reigns. Let's put them against each other. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was a real good way to kind of like, all right, let's kind of cut it off and put it to a head.
Uh-huh.
Because you guys had a great match at Fastlane. It was amazing. It really was.
Well, so I think I also think that it's good for Roman to have those kind of matches,
yes,
right? To go in there and really just fight. And because he for as inexperienced as he is, he's really, really good, right? Like when you're in the ring with him, like this guy is good.
Typical Samoan, typical third generation guy.
Yep.
There's something natural about both those things. When I say typical Samoan, I've never met a Samoan that wasn't a good to great worker.
Yes. Yeah.
And having that family lineage, he's grown up in the business. It's second nature.
Yeah. So obviously I was disappointed that I'm not in the main event of WrestleMania. it's just, life is just interesting and you never know how it's going to work out. And I've always, probably one of the frustrating things for people who are really big fans of me is that I take everything that comes and I try to embrace it. Like there are certain things that you can change and there are certain things that you can't. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, I'm going to do the best with what I'm given. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, I've never been somebody who's really big into like, no, you got to do this with me, you know, or whatever. That's not my personality. I will go in and like, if I don't like something, I'll go in and say like, hey, I think we should do this instead, but I don't force my opinion down anybody's throats and that sort of thing.
That's longevity, though. That's also being a pro. Like, I learned that in WCW when you'd get literally, I remember one time in the New Orleans Superdome in front of 40,000 people, I had a 1 minute match against Craig Pittman.
Yeah.
How do you do that and have any type of impact? But I did the best I could with that minute.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it wasn't much, but some people might have remembered for the next time I had a minute and a half.
Right, yeah.
The next thing you know, within 2-3 years, I'm a WWE champion.
Yeah.
That's because every time you go to the ring, Daniel Bryan, people know that they're going to get something quality and good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of, you know, you'll be here 10 years doing it, and sometimes you'll be the champion, and sometimes you won't.
Yeah.
But I always consider our squad as a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a football team.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're the quarterback and you're on the field for an hour, and other times you play one play. But if you screw up that play, the team could lose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And nobody's forcing me to do this, right? Mm-hmm. I do this because I like it, right? Wrestling doesn't owe me anything.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like, oh man, I worked so hard. Well, guess what? There's a ton of guys who have worked hard, right? When I look at, like, for example, I compare myself a lot to Nigel McGuinness. Mm-hmm. And whenever I start to feel down about like, ah, man, I wish this would happen, like during my neck surgery. Well, Nigel didn't even get this opportunity, right? Nigel and I were signed at the same time. They didn't continue with his contract because he had torn his bicep. He had let it heal naturally, and they said to sign him, he was going to have to get another surgery, or he was going to have to get a bicep surgery to have it repaired, and then wait for that whatever 9 months it is, and then they might look at him again. But then at that point he's in his 30s, and then you know, then it becomes
time moves on.
Yeah, and so you look at somebody like Nigel, who is suited for something like WWE, like a tall, good looking, good promo guy, like really good in the ring, and he never even got this opportunity.
Never got the shot. Yeah,
and it was sad to me. Like I had listened to that punk podcast, right, with Cabana, and one of the things that I think made me sad was that he considered himself a failure because he didn't wrestle in WrestleMania, right?
Main event of WrestleMania.
Didn't main event WrestleMania, and to me that was sad because he was so successful.
Huge,
right?
So
successful, and when you look at like, it's weird because when I look at when people have asked me this before, when did you think that you were successful? Well, I thought I was successful just going down to wrestling school. And then when I had, and maybe because I expect less out of life, I never envisioned being this.
Remember last time you told me you were voted the least ambitious person they'd ever seen in school or something.
Yeah. This is so, and so like when I had my first match, I thought that, oh man, I did it. right? I did it. And then I had my first Japan tour. And they wrote an article about me in the Daily World in Aberdeen, Washington. And people, when I would go home, they'd say, oh, man, we read this article about you in the Daily World. And in
you're
that,
in the paper.
In that small world,
yeah.
I had made it. I was a success. And if I had never, if after that, if nothing had ever happened, well, I probably would still, like, I might be, I'd still be 33 years old now and might be doing, I might be a teacher or something like that. But I still, yeah, I was a pro wrestler for a year and I went to Japan and I did this.
I was
like,
in the paper.
Yeah, I was in the paper. And like,
And you're right about the thing with Punk because, you know, I headlined WrestleMania, quote unquote. Triple H and Jericho went on last in Toronto. But Hogan and Rock were the match before us. And that was the, I mean, come on. I was on last.
Right, yeah.
Big deal. The next year, Shawn versus Jericho, we stole the show at WrestleMania 19. We were on fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
So what difference does it make if you're on last just because you're on last? I mean, last year you were on last, and it was a great match.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what if that match was on fourth? Would it have made it any less great?
Right. Well, it, but I understand where he's coming from because some people, like, and that's why he got to where he got.
Sure.
It's because he had these high expectations
drive
for himself.
And goal, yeah.
Yeah. You know, but it's just, you know, it's all just interesting because I just don't look at life like that, you know, like I just, me and different people have different perspectives. And so it's, you know, but it, again, it's like, we're blessed to be a part of this. Like literally what we do is not vital to the world, right? Like, you know, there's doctors out like, did you know, Jeff Farmer? The fake Sting?
NWO Sting.
Yeah, okay. So I was reading this book called Mountains Beyond Mountains, and it's talking about this guy who goes in and he went down to, I think it was Haiti, and was curing people of tuberculosis because the tuberculosis medicines are very inexpensive, but these people don't have access to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's going in there and he's, you know, and he's helping all these people. And then he goes down to Brazil and does the same thing. Then he goes to the prisons in Russia and is providing them with like tuberculosis medicine. And then in the middle of it, like towards the end of it, and like, and his brother is Jeff, his brother Jeff is, was a professional wrestler for WCW. And it's fake Sting's brother. And it's like, And just think about like, okay, when you're looking at a family and like, okay, who is providing the most to this world, right? You have this guy who is pretending to be Sting on TV, and then you have it. And I'm not going to discount. I've heard that he's actually an awesome human being and like does good stuff now.
Fun guy.
Yeah. And then, but then his brother is off changing, and nobody knows who his brother is until this person wrote this book about him. Like, he wasn't writing a book about himself. Somebody found out what he was doing and like wrote this book about him. Like, wow, this is somebody nobody knows who's like Mother Teresa going out there and helping the people of the world. And it's like, we're not that. What I do, it entertains people, and our fan base is passionate and it's awesome, and I love wrestling, and I you know, it drives me. But sometimes when you stop and you think, and it's like, man,
If this all ended tomorrow, I mean, would it really make a difference?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Our job is to entertain people. And I've always looked at that, like as Chris Jericho, after you reach a certain point, and you're there too, whether you come out first, third, fifth, last, you're going to get a huge reaction and have a great match.
Yeah.
The company knows it. The people know it. The guys you work with know it. That is the true secret of having success and longevity here in this company. They can put you anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's not a very common thing.
Yeah. Well, and like within WWE, I've been I've been the world heavyweight champion, but I've also been a vegan who the Bellas think is a virgin, and that's so they're competing to take my virginity. This is the original story.
Well, you ended up marrying one of them, so you did all right. That's not too bad.
You know, and so like,
yeah, you've been a crazy psycho guy. You've gone to therapy.
Yeah,
you've
I hugged Kane in the ring for 10 minutes on live television. You know what I mean? Like
fired. Three times or two twice.
Working on the third one.
So it's right before WrestleMania. You've got a great match for WrestleMania. What's your goal? You know, you're not, like you said, you kind of you not wishing that your main event would be nice to be in the main event, but you're not. What's still your overall goal for the match at WrestleMania?
Okay, so my goal in everything wrestling wise is to for something to be creative. ultimately fulfilling, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting. I had read an interview with Shawn. I don't talk to Shawn Michaels very often, but like I read an interview with him, and they said, were you ever tempted to come back and do this match with Daniel Bryan? And he said, no, not really, because, you know, like Bryan's great and all that kind of stuff, and I'm sure we'd have a great match, but the teacher-student story has been told before. And, you know, if I were to come back, it would want to be for something new and compelling and like that sort of thing. And it's interesting because Sean tried to get me into WWE in 2008 when you guys were doing your program with Lance, you know, to bring me into that story.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But when he called me and asked me if I was interested in doing it, what he had said to me is he said, I know you love being the starving artist, but maybe it's time for you to come make some money. And like, and so
with that voice, yeah. Make some money.
And so, you know, and it's anyway, it was interesting hearing that from that interview with Sean, because, realistically, that's what he was looking for. He was looking for a story that satisfies him, because we're all in somewhat creative and like, there's something that's creatively fulfilling. And another thing that I would like to do, this is not necessarily for WrestleMania this year, but just in general, is we have a select few guys at the top, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody else kind of gets same treatment, to where they'll win one week, they'll lose the next, all that kind of stuff.
Steven Booker.
Yeah, and like it's hard. It's been hard for guys to get elevated, right? And one of the things I'd like to do when I come back, and this is where I don't have your typical ambition, and it's a different kind of ambition, but to get more people over. Mm-hmm. And if we have to use me to do that, like, but I think that's better for the company, and then it's more fun. And then like, not only will I have more people to work with, John Cena will have more people to work with, and Roman Reigns will have more people to work with. And then guys in the back will be happier because there's this perception that if I work hard, I will get opportunities. Yeah. And then if I go in and if I have a feud with Roman, so say they feuded with me and it did really well. And then the office looks at him different. And then, for example, Heath Slater. Mm-hmm. I am not even friends with Heath Slater. I like him, right? Mm-hmm. But we're not like friends. We don't hang out or anything like that. I think Heath Slater is tremendous, right? He, like, as the one man Southern rock band, every time they give him any little bit of TV time, he gets booed.
He kills it.
And so somebody like Heath Slater put me in a program with Heath Slater for
which nobody would ever.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, why is Daniel Bryan in a program with Heath Slater? And let him show people what he can do. You know,
let him show why he's in the program.
Yeah, and so and then, you know, after that, if the company can see that, like, fans hate this guy, let's put him in a feud with so-and-so.
Yes.
And not everybody's going to be Hulk Hogan or Steve Austin or The Rock. But Crash Holly was super popular.
Absolutely.
And, like, you know, cast of characters in the same way that, like, Mizdow is super
super over.
Super popular right now.
Yeah.
In the sense, he's not a main event guy, but he doesn't need to be. When we come to these shows and like the Miz.
Everybody's over.
Yeah. And when Miz and Mizdow wrestled the Usos last night, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't.
You could have put that match on last.
Yeah. Yeah. And people were.
It was that much of a reaction.
Yeah. We're very entertained by the whole thing. And that's kind of my goal is to, like, okay, I've reached a point where, not that I can go anywhere and be over. I still want to go out there and have the best match that I can possibly have and go out there and do this. But I also want other guys to get the opportunities that I've had, because I've lucked into a lot of opportunities. People think that, like, oh, you worked really hard and then, you know, and then because you worked so hard, you got this. No, I had a lot of lucky breaks, in the sense of when I won the World Heavyweight Championship, Mark Henry got hurt. Mm. I just so happened to have the Money in the Bank and be in this story.
Good point.
And so there I was winning Money in the Bank. They originally wanted Wade to win it, but Alberto Del Rio was winning the other one, and they thought, oh, those stories will be too similar, up until the day of Wade was supposed to win that, then I won it. And so, like, and without that, I would have never been in this World Heavyweight Championship thing, and without that, I would have never been given promo opportunities to show them that I could do it. And then, like, for example, the Sheamus thing, 18 seconds with Sheamus, that was supposed to put him over. That was supposed to be his Ultimate Warrior moment. And who would have predicted that would have
became your catalyst, Jeff?
Yeah, it became this thing. And then, okay, I'm in a thing with Kane for however. Who would have predicted that we would have had that chemistry? It was just supposed to be, literally, we were supposed to do the therapy thing just to build to a match the next month. Well, we did the therapy thing, and people liked it. And then all of a sudden we had an eighth-month run after I had been in kind of the main event scene, but then there was nothing for me to do from there.
And there's always cycles
in
this
place. Yeah, and then so then all of a sudden, you know, there's that. And then the Shield just happened to come up at the right time, and those guys are perfect opponents for me. And so all of a sudden I'm looking like a superstar every week because I'm wrestling the Shield every week.
Yeah.
And then, you know...
And then Punk quits, which opens up a huge spot.
Yeah. And then Batista just so happens to get booed. And then all of a sudden, here I am. And like it's, you know, so I'd like to be able to provide opportunities for other guys who are every bit as talented as me. Mm-hmm. And who, if given the opportunity, they could get over. And maybe they won't main event WrestleMania, but get over to the point where, like, Heath Slater, to me, there's no reason why Heath Slater should not be as over as the Honky Tonk Man, right? He's
great
incredible.
Point. Santino Marella, that style.
Santino Marella. And, you know, everybody says, like, Cesaro, and I'm a big proponent of Cesaro, but, like, there's lots of guys, lots of Cesaros who are good.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're a consummate professional, man, and it's good to have you back because this company's much better with you on the shows doing all the stuff that you do.
No, thank you
very
much.
And now you got to go do another signing. Yeah. Just open the door twice. So. Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again to Daniel Bryan. Such a cool guy. Great energy. Always happy. He is going to steal the show this weekend at WrestleMania 31. I guarantee it. You wait and see what happens, man. And also thanks to Egypt for returning to give his predictions. He's always surly, but half the time he's right. So we'll see what happens with him. We'll also see what happens with Fozzy. We killed it on the Cinderblock Party Tour in Europe. That continues here in the States April 24th at 37 Main in Johns Creek, Georgia, also known as Atlanta. Then April 25th, we're killing it at Welcome to Rockville in Jacksonville. Big festival. Then May 18th in Chicago with Slash, man. We're touring with Slash. May 21st in Austin. May 23rd at the House of Blues in Houston. May 24th in Dallas. All of those dates at FozzyRock.com with Slash. And then October 30th, we're heading out with the legendary Kiss, my good friend Paul Stanley, and my friend Gene Simmons. We're going to be rocking it on the high seas with the Kiss Navy. That's right. October 30th to November 3rd, we're sailing from Miami to Jamaica. We'll be with Kiss, Steel Panther, Lita Ford. Come rock with us. That's KissCruise.com. KRUISE. It might almost be sold out, so go check it out now. Fozzy Rock for all the details for the Atlanta gig, Rockville and Jacksonville, the Slash shows, the Kiss shows. Come check it out. Come check out our VIPs. Join us. You won't regret it. And thanks once again to all the sponsors of Talk is Jericho. Vegas.com, the way to do Vegas. People, don't forget, let the insiders hook you up at Vegas.com. Use my promo code Jericho. You get an extra 10% off. Talking also thank you to DraftKings and DDP Yoga, and of course Amazon. And thanks to you guys for supporting my sponsors and doing all your online shopping through my Amazon links. Easiest way to support the show, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. You click on Talk is Jericho. See all three of my Amazon links at the UK, the USA, and the Canada. Of course, every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show for free. There's no hidden fees or extra charges. You just buy your stuff. Do it through my Amazon links, and you help me to pay some of my bills. All right, that's another great edition of Talk is Jericho. Thanks to Daniel Bryan. Thanks to you. In the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. And next Wednesday, that's right, next Wednesday, it's going to be a review of WrestleMania with an extra special guest, I promise. You will not regret it. You will not be disappointed. We're going to be talking all about WrestleMania 31 in depth. I'm going to be watching it on Sunday. You better be watching it on Sunday. WWE Network, go check it out. Do it now and come join me next week. And once again, yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.